You are listening to KBOO Portland.
On July 1st, 2020, Palestinians called for their supporters around the world to engage in a day of rage against Israel's recent effort to annex or fully colonize Palestinian land. Protests were held in cities across the U.S., including in Portland, Oregon, where hundreds of people gathered at Terry Schrunk Plaza to protest the Israeli annexation of Palestinian land. One of the demands is that Congress end the $3.8 billion in military funding to Israel every year and instead invest in black communities. Many of the speakers made connections between the struggle for black lives in the U.S., apartheid South Africa, and the struggle for Palestinian self-determination. Here are some of the voices of the protests in downtown Portland.
In 1967, my father was a young 8-year-old boy living with his mother, his sister, in their small village in Palestine. On a fateful summer day, the Israelis invaded my father's village, and my grandmother, looking at the children in front of her, remembered what had previously happened almost 20 years before, the Nakba, the violent expulsion and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from Palestine. Looking at those children, she knew that her only choices were to have them live somewhere else safely or potentially being dead and being ethnically cleansed and not having a future. My grandmother made the hard choice that we see many mothers making, traveling across multiple borders so their children can live a better life. My grandmother made that decision knowing that a better future, that she could get a better future for her children. It's important to know that this annexation of Palestine didn't start today. It didn't start yesterday. It didn't start in 1967. It started in 1948. It's been going on for over 70 years. Israel has been doing this since day one, and the only thing that they aren't doing anymore is lying to us about what they're doing, which is making sure that no Palestinians live on this land ever. When I began organizing around Palestine, it also occurred when the Arab Spring happened. This was an uprising against the brutal authoritarian regimes that existed in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Syria, in Yemen. I saw this uprising and took so much hope from it, and it connected me to so many struggles, black liberation struggle, indigenous struggles, and reminded me of how violent borders are to us. Now we are seeing a similar uprising happening here in the States with the Black Lives Matter movement. We need to channel this energy that we have right now, this anger that we have, into organizing for a better future. We know that these city officials don't care about us. They don't care about any of us. They need to know that we need justice for black lives. They need to know that Palestinians need to live a dignified life like the rest of us. And they need to know that there will be no justice until there will be no peace until there is justice. No good morning, no good night, and they need to remember that.
Thank you so much. So I'm kind of your MC. Hey, can we say no justice, no peace? No justice,
no peace.
No justice,
no peace.
Can we say stolen land?
Stolen land!
Yesterday, at Peninsula Park, I experienced yet another one of these slanderous, malicious attempts to silence Palestinian voices. It was misconstrued, tweeted, 10,000 people viewed it, it was followed, it was dangerously malicious. The tweet was taken down, it was a Coin6 reporter. I suggest y'all contact Coin 6. So between the speakers, I'm going to give some of the top neoliberal myths about Israel, Palestine. So I'm going to do one, and then I'll hand off to the next speaker. One of the biggest myths is anti-Zionism is anti-Semitic. At a broad sweep, Zionism is the exceptionalist belief that defines one people above all other people on the basis of a faith and claims an uncontestable right to the establishment of a state on those terms. At its core, Zionism declares that it is for the chosen people and the chosen people only to inhabit their ancestral land. Within Zionist logic, that term coined by Malcolm X, there never was and never shall be another people who also have claim to the same ancestral land. In essence, Zionism denies the ancestral plurality that in fact has always existed in the area that is now only called Israel. To bring that belief into reality, the Zionist movement created an ethnostate that continues to justify its existence and the internationally recognized crime needed to maintain it as self-defense and security. We know what those terms are like. We experience that here. Security, self-defense, does that sound familiar? To see the true racist, white supremacist logic of Zionism, all you need to do is simply look at the demographics of Israel. Look at the early settlers, the current population, the systems of government, policing, and public institutions. What you will see is a clear stratification of economic ability, political representation, and community health. This is because Zionism is and was always a movement to empower, enrich, and support white Europeans. By an overwhelming majority, people of European descent hold office, have all the wealth, live in heavily secured gated communities and settlements, and are protected by the military state. Indigenous Arab Jews and Jews of African descent live by a separate law. One land, two laws. That's by definition apartheid. Check the prisons. Check the prisons and you'll find out. You'll see. It's only Arabs and Africans. Check the neighborhoods in squalor with schools in ruin. And you'll find Arabs and Africans. I always say there's nothing Jewish about the state of Israel. And that's because exclusion, racism, exceptionalism, genocide, displacement, dispossession are anti-Jewish values. The Jewish moral compass rejects all these things, especially since Jewish people have experienced all those things repeatedly throughout history. As a Semite myself, with some Jewish blood that runs through my veins, having grown up exposed to Jewish values from Jewish family members, I say loudly and clearly, Judaism does not allow for the actions of Israel, justified by the logic of Zionism.
Black Lives Matter and the fight for justice that black people have been fighting in this country for over 400 years. So this isn't new. And the connection with Palestine and black liberation isn't actually very new either. It's been happening for a long time. We heard about it recently when you heard Ferguson, you had people in Palestine sending advice and texting about tear gas, like how to handle tear gas, you know, when the police were using tear gas against the protesters there. So you had people in Palestine advising people because they had experience with the tear gas, because the tear gas that's being used against Palestinians is also used against, made in America and used against black people here. So right there, people in Palestine saw the same thing was happening to black people here, and black people also recognized, we've seen the same thing. When we see, you know, the Israeli army with their knees on the neck of young boys, it's very reminiscent of what we see with our African American youth. When we see the police with their knee on the neck, when they're dragging young youth and beating them up senselessly, it doesn't look different. It looks the same to me. I grew up here in Portland, Oregon. I was born at Emmanuel Hospital. So I grew up in a place, Oregon, which is a very racist state, you know. I'll speak to that. It's very racist. I was born at Emmanuel Hospital. I'm 47 years old. And this isn't new. This has been going on for a very long time. I've dealt with, as a teenager, I experienced police brutality. I was beat and assaulted by police at age 16. And I was a much smaller person at that time. So I was 16, beat by the police. So this isn't new. What we're protesting, what we're speaking, what we're angry, what we're crying out about is not new here. So, you know, when I see people gathered here with this day of rage, I want you to carry that same rage that you're feeling. And I feel that rage too. When I see, you know, Trump and Netanyahu, when I see them, you know, patting each other on the back and congratulating each other about what they're going to do to Palestine, Trump giving the green light to Netanyahu to continue this annexation, I feel rage. Because when I look at, you know, what's happening in Palestine, I see a white supremacist state. It looks very similar to what I see and experience here. It's the same thing. They're enacting evil, and I feel it here as a Black American. I feel the same evil, and I'm enraged. When I see that, I feel rage, okay? So it's not, I'm here not for likes or acceptance. I'm here because I'm enraged. Because when I look at the history, when you look, okay, go back to South Africa. We saw apartheid. There was a police state. There was a police state there. The police were oppressing and abusing the indigenous Zulu and Xhosa tribes men. And the same thing, and when Nelson Mandela, he told us to look to Palestine to be free, because none of us are free, as we know, until we're all free. So if we're asking for our freedom, if Black Americans asking, we want freedom, we're also asking for Palestinian freedom. If Palestinians are asking for freedom, they're also asking for Black freedom, because we're not going to be free. And this fight, if you really are about justice, you're going to stand equally for Black lives, for Palestine, for indigenous rights. Like, this is indigenous land, and we're all here, you know, running around. The police are dominating, beating us and gassing us and abusing us on indigenous land. So it's all interconnected, you know, from Africa to the Middle East to America. It's all interconnected. It's not separate. So I hope I see the same faces with the same energy for Black Lives Matter. Or, you know, and I speak of Black Lives Matter not as a franchise, but as a thought. That's just a new statement. You know, we've been asking for justice and that our lives matter for 400 years. This is not new. The meaning is that Black lives matter. We say it because they haven't mattered. Okay, Black lives, Palestinian lives, indigenous lives, all these lives matter. And if we really stand for justice, we have to stand equally, you know?
You're listening to the voices of protesters speaking in Portland on July 1st, 2020, as part of a Palestinian Day of Rage against the Israeli annexation of Palestinian land.
My name is Olivia. I'm with the Democratic Socialists of America. How many of you are at an action for Palestine for the first time ever? Okay, good. Welcome. So there are other speakers that have gone more into depth about annexation and occupation and the current circumstances on the ground in Palestine. So today I just want to tell you what we can do about it here in the U.S. You may or may not know that the United States is deeply complicit in Israeli apartheid and occupation. Since 1967, the U.S. has been Israel's biggest cheerleader. The U.S. has used its Security Council veto 43 times to shield Israel from international accountability. The U.S. gives nearly $4 billion a year of our tax dollars to Israel in military funding that they use to commit war crimes, to bomb Gaza, to demolish homes, to imprison children. None of this is anything. Palestinian professional associations, popular resistance committees, and other Palestinian civil society bodies. So this is a call coming from Palestine for the international community to stand in solidarity with them by taking these specific actions. So when people say that the BDS movement singles out Israel, it's like, no shit. Like, it's a call from Palestinian society because they are living under Israeli apartheid and occupation. That's like saying the South African anti-apartheid movement is singling out South Africa. Like, duh. So the BDS movement was actually inspired by the South African anti-apartheid movement. If you recall, South Africa was living under an apartheid system. Apartheid is a word which means separateness. Apartheid in South Africa was a system of institutionalized racial segregation, which benefited the white minority, the colonizers, and descendants of colonizers in South Africa. This system was overturned eventually by a massive arms and trade embargo on South Africa internationally, as well as artists and celebrities and a popular movement around the world boycotting South Africa. Though the United States at the time condemned this movement and wanted to keep apartheid entrenched in South Africa, now they will go back and quote Nelson Mandela like they were there with them the whole time. That is the same pattern we are seeing now, and you can bet that when we end apartheid in Palestine, these detractors who have spent so much time and money trying to destroy us are going to try and say that they were with us all along, because they will have to reckon with the fact that they are on the wrong side of history. So, the Palestinian BDS call urges nonviolent pressure on Israel until it complies with international law, very tame stuff, by meeting three demands. Number one, ending the occupation and colonization of all Arab lands and dismantling the wall. So the land that Israel is trying to annex right now, as has been mentioned, has been illegally occupied by Israel for over half a century. Demand number two, recognizing the fundamental rights of the Arab-Palestinian citizens of Israel to full equality. One-fifth of Israel's citizens are Palestinians who remain inside the armistice lines after 1948. The Palestinians who remain inside these lines are subjected to a system of racial discrimination enshrined in more than 50 laws that impact every aspect of their lives. And demand number three, respecting, protecting, and promoting the rights of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes. There are now more than 7.25 million Palestinian refugees. They are denied their right to return to their homes simply because they are Palestinian. They are not allowed to go back. So these are the three demands of the BDS movement. So how can this look in action? Some concrete examples of each of the letters. B is for boycott. So some of the most high-profile boycott campaigns against Israel came when artists like Lorde and Lana Del Rey canceled their concerts in Israel. Michael Bennett, an NFL player, refused to go on an NFL propaganda trip to Israel. This is an example of what a cultural boycott is. Boycotts can also be like the campaign we had here in Portland, where we pressured the Portland Trailblazers to end their sponsorship with Leupold and Stevens, which supplied sniper scopes to the Israeli occupation forces, and we won that demand. So boycotts aren't just about like an individual level, but also at the organizational and institutional level. So universities like PSU should not be hosting representatives of the Israeli government. The BDS movement does not promote boycott of individuals who happen to be Israeli. It promotes boycotts of speakers or organizations who are normalizing and whitewashing the apartheid regime. So their purpose is to come here and normalize relations with Israel and legitimize it in mainstream discourse, like, you know, Israel's a great, normal country, nothing to see here, very normal. Then that is grounds for boycott, not just if, you know, a random person happens to be Israeli. The BDS movement has a lot of really great guidelines and educational resources on this on bdsmovement.net. Recommend everyone checks it out. Another really great example of a powerful boycott action is when dock workers in the Bay Area did a work stoppage and refused to load ships that were shipping weapons to Israel. And these type of collective actions, taken by workers are hugely impactful for the movement. Divestment means simply divesting pension funds, investment funds from Israeli companies or companies that profit from Israeli occupation and apartheid. For example, the city of Portland was invested in Caterpillar, a company whose bulldozers are used to demolish Palestinian homes, a company whose bulldozers murdered Palestine solidarity activist Rachel Corrie, a Palestinian home to protect it from demolition. Israel murdered her, and they used Caterpillar equipment to do it. Our city should not be complicit in that. So elections, let that expire because they don't actually care. So if you want to get involved in holding our city accountable and not being complicit in Israeli apartheid, let me know. Sanctions. Sanctions in this context simply means government needs to fulfill their legal obligations to end Israeli apartheid and not actively aid or assist in its maintenance. For example, by banning business with illegal Israeli settlements, by ending military trade and free trade agreements, by ending, for example, $4 billion a year in military funding that the U.S. gives to Israel, no strings attached. Now, we finally have some legislators who are trying to attach some strings. This week, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez issued a statement proposing the conditioning of that $4 billion in military aid to Israel on their annexation of Palestinian land. And I commend AOC and the other legislators who signed onto this for their bravery. But, like, it's pretty sad that that's bravery, you know? Why is this bare minimum statement being considered, like, brave? You know, that is where we are at with this discourse. We have every right to not want our tax dollars to be invested in militarism and violence, no matter where it is, but to be instead invested in community and care. And these are the values of the movement for Palestinian liberation. None of us are free until all of us are free. Diaspora with the abuses of power being committed by the state of Israel. This smear is purposely conflating Israeli apartheid, which is a humanitarian abuse of Palestinians by a government, with Jewish religious persecution, which is a very real thing and which is on the rise right now. This is shameful. This is a shameful and purposeful smear and misrepresentation of what the BDS movement stands for. And this is what the ruling class, the capitalist media, and our warmongering lawmakers want. They want us divided. They want all of our communities traumatized and at each other's throats, and we are not falling for that anymore. We know that BDS was a successful strategy in South Africa, and it will be successful in Palestine, and now more than ever, we need to answer the call to action. So I just want to close by quoting labor leader Jane McAlevey, who said, "The capitalists don't care about you unless you stop them from making money." This is why labor strikes work. This is why BDS works. When we interrupt the profit that is made from this ongoing violence, and when we use these campaigns to educate the public, to deprive these regimes of support, that is when they will have no choice but to listen.
The third neoliberal myth. It's a unique issue. Nah, partner. It's actually the most calming and pressing issue of today. It's the issue of racism, of colonialism, of the military industrialist system that upholds capitalism and racist systems. Do you see, if y'all been on the streets, do you see the Israeli tear gas that's getting shot at y'all here? Yeah. The rubber bullets? It's the same bullets. The police that have been trained by the IDF all over this country? Do you not see the same overwhelmingly disproportionate percentage of people of color in Israel and in the USA that are underserved, incarcerated, murdered, dispossessed, and disenfranchised? Do you not see all the companies in the USA, the billion-dollar companies that profit by designing and building products in Israel? Most notably, tools of death and war. Do you not see that in this country, while there are shortages of face masks for medical workers on the front lines during a pandemic, the U.S. government first-class mailed 1 million face masks for Israeli soldiers to wear as they terrorize Palestinian villages? Your money. Your money, your tax money goes towards Israel giving them over $4 billion a year for military aid to the most advanced military in the world. while our infrastructure is crumbling.
You've been listening to the voices of protesters speaking at a rally on Wednesday, July 1st, 2020 in Portland, Oregon. Protests in support of the Palestinian people were held around the world on Wednesday. In addition, more than 1,000 European parliamentarians signed on to a letter denouncing Israel's plan to annex parts of the occupied West Bank, Jordan Valley, saying that the move would be fatal to prospects of Israeli-Palestinian peace. The members of parliament represent 25 different European countries, and they urged the leaders of those countries to prevent the annexation process. You're listening to KBOO, Portland Community Radio. فضلوا شرفونا شو بتحب مضيف من دم عربي ولا الدموع من عيوننا بعتقد هيك تأملوا نستقبل من هيك تعقدوا لما تدركموا على غلطة من هيك لبسنا الكوفي البيضة والسودة صاروا كلاب الزمان يلبسوها كموضة مهما تفننوا فيها مهما غيروا بلونة كوفية عربية بتضل عربية حطتنا بدنا إياه ثقافتنا بدنا إياه كرامتنا بدنا إياه كل شي إلنا بدنا إياه ما رح نسكت لن نسمح لن ليك ليك لا بقلن يسرقوا شغلي مش إلهن ما خصن فيه هلدونا بلتبس لبس هالأرض بكفي هنش طمعانين عالقدس قدس عرفوا كيف تكونوا بشر ربيلنا بتلبسوا كوفي جينا نذكرن مين إحنا وغصب عن أبوهم هي حطتنا من هيك لبسنا الكوفي لأننا وطنية الكوفي كوفي عربي من هيك لبسنا الكوفي هويتنا الأساسية الكوفي كوفي عربي يلا علي الكوفي علولي هالكوفية الكوفي كوفي عربي علوه هلا بلاد الشام كوفية عربية بدل عربي ما في بعد مثل الشعب العربي فرجوني أي أمي بالدنيا أكتر مؤثرة الصورة واضحة نحن مهد الحضارة تاريخنا وتراثنا الشاهد على وجودنا من هيك لبست الثوب الفلسطيني من حفا جنين جبل النار إلى رام الله خليني شوف الكوفية البيضة والحمرة خلينا نعليها لفوق بالسما أنا هجاه ديك العرب الثاني بخص غزة الثاني بهز هزكلي ماتي حرب سجل أنا شادي يا منصور والحطة هويتي من يوم ما خلقت سيدي والشعب مسؤوليتي لك أنا تربيت بين الغرب وبين بين لغتين بين بخيل بين فقير شفت الحياة من الشقتين زلمتني الكوفية كيف ما لبستوني وين ما شلحتوني بضلني عأصولي فلسطينية من هيك لبسنا الكوفي لأنها وطنية الكوفي كوفي عربي من هيك لبسنا الكوفي هويتنا الأساسية الكوفي كوفي عربي يلا علي الكوفي علولي هالكوفية الكوفي كوفي عربي علوه هلا بلاد الشام كوفية عربي
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience, produced at a different location every week.
To this day, there's still ongoing questions as to whether or not there is a citizenship question. whether or not there are people's information is safe and secure. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're very thankful that the question is no longer out there, but the fear and anxiety still is, right? And this is something that we've always said since day one, since the day that the citizenship question was added. Like, this was always going to be an uphill battle to educate not just the Latino community, but just like the immigrant community in general, that their participation matters. And it actually doesn't matter if you're a citizen or not. Like, you live in this country, and the Constitution says that all people will be counted.
Today, the Trump administration's relationship with the 2020 census, from the citizenship question that was struck down by the courts last year to the two new political appointees just last week. And finally, the COVID delay that could have an effect on states redrawing their voting districts. It's 2020, a zero year, which means it's time for the decennial census count. The deadline to self-respond is October 31st. While the count itself is a scientific endeavor, the census is the basis for political power. How many representatives each state gets, where districts